Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Dave.
And we're the hosts of the Chasing Tomorrow podcast, where we bring you stories that delve into the science and spirit behind intriguing people doing extraordinary things. Performance Tea has been supporting the Chasing Tomorrow podcast since day one, and they've released a new electrolyte and adaptogen-powered sport mix called Endurance. The lemonade and iced tea flavor are delightful, and at 70 calories per scoop, the blend is easy on the gut. You can check it out at performancetea.com, and they have given us a discount code for any of our listeners to get 20% off their purchase. Just use Chasing20 at checkout.
Welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast. This week, it's episode 72. This week, we have the new backyard world record holder, Harvey Lewis. Harvey, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, ended up running 85 mind-numbing, knee-aching, jaw-dropping yards at Biggs Backyard Ultra down in Bell Buckle, Tennessee, beating Chris Roberts, who ended up getting the world's longest assist last week's episode. I recommend everybody going and listening to it. This week, we're going to talk to world record holder Harvey Lewis. Now, Harvey, if you want to find out a little bit more about him, we're going to jump right into the Biggs Backyard. If you ever want to find out a little bit more about him, go back to episode number 19, listen about where this guy came from, and just really ultimately this guy's humble nature and his mindset is perfect for this. If you want to do something like this, more like Harvey Lewis. So without further ado, welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast. Harvey, how's the recovery coming?
Oh, thanks, fellas. I really appreciate it. And, you know, it's kind of funny because I know some of us are still dreaming about the race, but it's been coming very well.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, we should just jump into lots of other stuff, but you actually ran a marathon this morning. So I think people would probably feel like, oh, man, you would have been taking it easy, but I guess you're just back at it.
Yeah, well, it was like a more relaxed like pace, which was nice. I had like pre-planned this, so I knew like that I was planning to go very far in Biggs, and so I like already settled on the 4:45 pace group. Normally I pace probably like the 3:05 or 3:15 or maybe like 3:25. So it was just a really nice like community event because Cincinnati has a great Flying Pig marathon and we have a great community. Mm-hmm. And this is our first race since COVID with the pig. So the community is just like really excited to get back into it. And my little reference on the dreaming was because Laz just posted a couple of days ago that he's still waking up in the middle of the night and thinking that he forgot to blow the whistle. And my friend Judd, who was my crew chief, messaged me yesterday and he said he keeps waking up thinking that he like overslept and forgot to, you know, get me the items for crewing. And I haven't had a couple, I've had a few good nights of really, really nice sleep. I have woken up a few times. Actually, like I'll be sleeping. I'll think I'm still out there running back and forth. And I kind of shift size on the bed when I think I'm doing the trail or I'm doing the road. So it's like, I kind of shift the places in the bed. So that's pretty funny. Like the first, I'd say a week or 10 days after that, I would continue to dream that I was still running. And I know my fiance was getting tired of me moving around the bed so much.
And so would you call that a dream or would you call that a nightmare, Harvey?
Oh, no. There's no nightmare happening, man. That's a real... Yeah, it's there's so many nice things about that whole journey. I definitely, but maybe we'll like it always does kind of happen around Halloween, so we may get the Haunted Woods back eventually, like the next couple of years. But they always have like a theme adventure thing going on down there. But that race was just something like really special, and all the characters in it.
Yeah, so it all really, Harvey, it all came together for you on the day. And let's start from the beginning. 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, you're in Laz's and Sandra's backyard getting ready. How were your nerves going into the day? I mean, you end up having the assist last year with Courtney. So I think it was 67 hours, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, and so yeah. Tell me about your feelings and your nerves going into the day, the morning of and the day before. How are you feeling going in?
Well, I was really excited. I know like my big A races this year were the Ohio Backyard, Badwater, and Biggs. And so I was really just amped up for it. I know I had a little bit challenged like the few nights before the race sleeping. I mean, I did get like at least 6 hours of sleep, but because I've been training, and then, you know, you take that taper, you got all that extra energy that's just boiling over. And so my energy was really high. But I was in a nice mood. I mean, I have a really great crew chief. My crew chief, Judd, is you know, one of my very good close friends. And you know, it's like Comedy Central. I mean, he's always filled with all kinds of great humor. So, I mean, in that environment, plus there was amazing food there I brought along. I mean, it looked like we had moved in. So I was pretty stoked just to be there and observing what's happening, like seeing the international runners, seeing Laz in his moment. Like, it's great seeing his enthusiasm with the setup and all the flags. And it's just a really nice time of the year, too, with the edge of fall. And the colors just starting to hit with the leaves. So it was really nice being down there.
So, you know, as another crew member down there with Dave, and we talked to Chris last week, and you think a little bit about, so this thing goes over multiple days. And with the night and the day course, you got this shift that happens. And, you know, we got a little bit lucky in that the night before it started, it poured like crazy. But then it stopped raining, which, you know, who knows what would happen had that been happening during the race. But tell us a little bit about like day one. I mean, you know, it's not like this is a couple hour thing and you're going to run hard. You have to sort of like think about, okay, I'm out on the day course, I hit to the night course, come back. I mean, was it like feeling as good as you wanted to? Were you eating well, resting? What was the strategy day one?
Yeah, I mean, well, first the weather. Yeah. I mean, we really like got like ideal conditions. It was like we were taking a trip down to the Bahamas with only cool skies. So, I mean, I was really appreciating like the nice, calm weather. You know, the first year I ran Biggs in 2017 and I had no idea what I was doing down there. Guillaume and I, we got this crazy torrential rain the second night that was like coming at us in sheets. Like, it was crazy, and we didn't have like that much rain gear. I remember I couldn't even see which direction I was going exactly on the road. I just have to follow the line. So you know, that the idea of having like the calm weather was really, really nice. I just like day one, I just really, you know, ate all the food I could. Like, I eat all plant-based foods, and I had like really just I mean it looked like an incredible, I looked like I was geared up for about a month in Tennessee in terms of my food selection. So I remember I was eating these Abe's muffins, I was eating like just fruit, like dried fruit. I was drinking like all kinds of great drinks. I had like this organic chocolate banana almond like drink from Costco. I mean, I had like all my favorites. So, I mean, it was like a party, and it was just an interesting environment because we, every year this kind of evolves a little bit. So we had the big tents versus having all individually staged smaller tents. And so being in the big tent, it looked like a bit of a circus tent. And then you had like, each runner was kind of poised like 5 feet, you know, next to each other by spread out by 5 feet. And I think they even had like little tombstones for us with our names on. So, I mean, I just kind of laughed at the things and just didn't take the, you know, anything too seriously. I just enjoyed like the moment and just the story of it.
Yeah. And so Harvey, you look like from the very beginning, you went out, you know, Laz rang the bell and every hour you went out very, very conservatively. You know, I remember every loop, you know, I went out. And I ran, in fact, you know, in comparison to when I ran that race 2 years ago, I ran, you know, the daytime loops 2 to 3 minutes slower than what I ran, you know, 2 years ago. Yet every single hour I found myself coming through first, you know, in front of everybody else. And I remember Laz ended up pulling me aside after the first hour and he put his arm over me and he said, now let me tell you about the story who, you know, let me tell you about the story about the guy or that guy who came in faster than anybody else. No, he never wins the race. And he said, you know, don't be that guy, Dave. And so the next hour comes by, Harvey, and I come through and faster than anybody else. And he says, hey, everybody, look, it's that guy. And you know, it became the funny thing that everybody was talking about. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm feeling comfortable. Feeling like I'm running slowly. But you know what? I look back and I look at, you know, you and Courtney DeWalter and everybody else. And you guys are fast runners, but yet you're running a lot slower. Were you intentionally pulling the pace back that much? Do you feel like it paid dividends later?
So did he say that to you this year or?
Oh yeah, He said it to me for about 12 or 14 hours straight. Oh yeah. I'm that guy. He's like, hey, it's that guy, right?
That is something else. Oh, yeah. He is something. He's a character.
Oh, he's awesome.
He certainly loves to like mess with us, you know, a little bit. Yeah. So, you know, I can't really speak for everyone because, you know, we all have different like paces that feel comfortable. You know, for example, today I paced the 4:45 group, which, you know, like in looking at that, that's like, wow, that's a really, you know, a slower time than I would normally run. But to be honest with you, I felt probably more tired running a 4:45 time than I would if I ran like a 3:15 or 3:25 time, just because my stride is different. So my stride is much more. It's just slowed down. It's maybe a little. I do something strange. I like shorten it a little bit. You know, it's so, you know, we're not all programmed to run the exact same speed, but finding that equilibrium point, like finding the place that is that sweet spot, is the important part of the route. And you know, so for me, I think one of my strengths is pacing, and I go off of like what feel like what how I feel. I don't have any heart rate monitor or anything like that, but I just know my you know, I probably know the heart rate like based on like just, you know, what feels right to me. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say that my mode is like the mode for everybody. And you know, I think some of our European friends across the pond, like they I know like the Carl Sable, you know, they had made a big point for how they had run, you know, faster loops in last year and how that really helped them. So I think that, you know, there's like a couple of trains of thought, like some people are thinking, oh, you know, maybe I should run faster loops and then I can like bank more sleeping time, or maybe I should run like a little more conservative. And yeah, so I mean, I don't know. I think it's hard to emulate exactly. You kind of have to find the correct balance for yourself. But that being said, person that usually is winning every loop on the first day is usually the person that is not going to be even in the, like, you know, the final three or five. Exactly. Yeah, and typical. I mean, you're a different absolutely. Caliber.
You've no, got no, 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 no. But it's true. Like what I was doing on the course was I was running my pace that I thought was comfortable. But yet, you know, when you get done these races, you have to look at yourself like seriously in the mirror and go, okay, what was that? Was that ego? What was motivating you to be out there at that pace doing what you were doing? And so, you know, even though you think you're slowing down enough, you probably could even slow down even further. I know, Harvey, you're a fast marathoner. So, I mean, when it comes to, you know, like during the first 12 hours, during that first daytime loop, what were you running? What were your typical you know, loops? Were they 52 minutes, 54 minutes?
Yeah, I think they were somewhere in that range, you know. Yeah. Yeah, again, like I just was doing what felt good to me. So, you know, like what's good for me is not like necessarily, yeah, I could play different I'll put it this way. I could play different. I could play different plays. You know, mm-hmm. like I have different plays in the playbook. So mm-hmm. that was one day's playbook, but I may come back in 2 years and do something entirely different mm-hmm. just to mess with people. So it's like, there's so much of that game. It's like a game of chess. So, I mean, like, yeah. if you look at my times, they vary like day to day too. So mm-hmm. There's so many different dynamics, which makes this race style pretty exciting. Is you can like do different, so many different things, and different things can work, which is kind of fun too.
So your day one, you know, for our listeners, didn't have a lot of dropouts. It was pretty strong. You know, a few right in the beginning, someone got lost, someone hurt their ankle, but for the most part, the crew was there through day one. So everyone, I'd say there were a few who looked like they were struggling a little, no pick on anyone, but you know, they might go. And so it was really just a settling in day, I imagine, right? You're feeling pretty good. Are you napping at all during the night when you're back day one?
Yeah, I mean, I did like nap at nighttime for sure. Mm-hmm. And that was nice. Like it was really nice. So, but you know, it's kind of incredible. Like I think unfortunately, one of the runners, she got lost. That was really, really, mm-hmm. really disappointing because she made the trip there and we all felt really bad about it. It's one thing I thought about too, because I'm like, just one little like slip up and mistake. Mm-hmm. Another runner, he had like the bell had rang and then he went over and he picked up like a phone or something from his camp. And then he was out, and like that, it's so unfortunate because, you know, you could see how people would make that mistake when you're like, mm-hmm. you're tired or you're enthusiastic. And so, I mean, I was always trying to concentrate on just not making a mistake like that, because it could totally happen, you mm-hmm. know? So that was always a big thing. But the sleep is different. Like the first year we did this, I think, you know, we were just all sitting up in chairs and like kind of still talking and chit chatting. Even Guillaume and I, like on day or night two, we were just kind of like, we had that crazy rain, but neither of us were like laying down. We were just kind of like sitting there looking at each other, like down in food and this and that. So the race has evolved. And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised in 2 years if the first 24 hours, no one drops out. Like it's very possible like everyone stays in for 24 hours, which is kind of cool. But it also pushes the race even deeper.
Yeah, it sure does. And so Harvey, let's talk a bit about that, because you know, yeah, I remember the lady who ran off course, you know, and she came back and she looked pretty upset. You know, the fellow from I think he was from South America or South Africa.
He's from Ecuador.
Ecuador, Andres. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he circled back, and that was heartbreaking because, all one little mistake. And, you know, I thought about that too on the course, because there were times where I was drifting, you're running and you're mentally drifting and you're daydreaming and you're in a flow state. And you keep thinking, oh, okay, no. Like, you don't lose focus as well, too, running through that kind of that rocky canyon-y area.
Yeah.
And I remember the one time I tripped and fell in there and Courtney was right behind me and right square into a rock, and you're thinking, there are times that you don't want to fall and you don't fall.
Right? Yeah, I may have fell on that same rock, man.
We're gonna
broke my fourth metacarpal.
So we're gonna get to that the further that we talk about this race, because, I definitely want to get to the broken hand. But, you know, was there any one time where you were really worried about, you know, losing focus, running off course? You know, making that one right turn on the road instead of the left turn. Was there any one time where you felt you were compromised?
Well, I never had a concern about the actual turns on the course. Fortunately, I don't know. We really got like that drilled into our mind, so mm-hmm. that was not a problem. But I definitely was always aware that like all it would take. I mean, the first day, honestly, I fell like three times. And I mm-hmm. felt like I felt the most simple places, like where there are no obstacles, it was just smooth sailing. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of look over and like look at some tree or something, or I would be, yeah, and I would, or I'd be talking to someone and my mind would kind of like leave the spot for a minute, and all of a sudden I'd just like be falling and I'd be rolling with it. Like, yeah, I didn't have any issue because I was physically feeling strong and I was able to roll, land fine, no problem. And where it was like a little more technical, I wasn't like, my mind wasn't like drifting like that. But that made me just double down on like, yeah, you gotta be so careful, because if you have one fall like that and you hit your knee or you hit, you know, you can totally throw yourself off permanently for the race. And so that's the challenge of the race, because, you know, it's like you really, even on the road, I actually fell once on the road. I think the first, or no, it was the second night. Like I hit like a little, like, I don't know. I was like, where's that hole? I didn't even see a hole. Like, I hit some like,
I don't think there was a hole. You might be making that up.
I was running with Steve Slavy and I was like, I rolled. I was like, keep going. You got this, Steve. and then I didn't fall again. Like, I don't think I fell again on the daytime, on the second day or the third day. It wasn't until the fourth day I fell again. I like broke my hand. So I definitely knew that, you know, it's part of the race. You can't like entirely zone out. Like, you can zone out a little bit on the road, but you really have to always be conscious of where you are on the trail. And it's very interesting in this backyard ultra format, because you're like, Biggs is a more difficult course than a lot of the backyards out there, but not saying so the toughest. I mean, there's some really crazy courses that people come up with, you know, 1,000 feet of climbing per hour, or, you know, really technical things. But Biggs is not just like a grassy plain, you know, where you could just like run blindfolded, you know. It's like there's an element of challenge. So I mean, like, you know, it creates its element that you have to be real mindful.
That's the hard thing, balancing that with the physical stress and the mental stress. And so day one, sort of everything's established, you're feeling pretty good, you get into day two, you know, now you sort of say, I'm going to be here for a while, right? That's sort of the attitude. We always know that the minute someone might say, oh, I'm not feeling good, I don't know if I can make it, then the race is sort of over. So day two felt good. Did you start to get stronger as you went on, or was it just sort of maintaining the rhythm you had developed at that point?
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's like, you do go through waxes and wanes, and you go through, you know, a little bit of highs and lows still, no matter what. I think you also can kind of settle into where you are, and you get sort of like hungry, you know, I think there's like a competitiveness to it too, you know? So it's like that competitiveness with each other and pushing each other. It makes it a fun game, you know, to go at. I would say, yeah, the second day I felt pretty strong.
Mm-hmm. So Harvey, you know, the second day is interesting because I was busy looking around as well too. And, you know, it's interesting because on day two, it gets real, right? You know, you're 24, 28, 32 hours in. And I don't care who you are. If you've been running 100 miles, you're getting tired. You've had a low by then. You know, you've run through the night. And that night is a bit tough. You know, you're running into this, you know, dark abyss of a road, and it's easy to, you know, mentally, it's easy to start feeling pretty bad for yourself. It's easy to start looking for exit doors, right? They become present, that blister becomes bigger, hunger, the food issue, whatever happens. Day two, you're 24, you're 32 hours in. When did you have your first low, and how did you get out of it?
Yeah, so I remember pretty distinctly that the second night I did have like a low, and probably I was experiencing what you were talking about just right there. And just that's where it's really helpful to have a real powerful crew chief. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not one to rely too heavily on my crew. Like, in fact, I pretty much know exactly what I want to eat and what I need. So I'll tell my crew members, like, next loop, I could use this, or next loop, I could use that. And I pretty much like direct, versus I know some runners, they can't let their crew direct them. You know, my crew chief, Judd, and I, we're pretty strong connected. We actually met at the Marathon de Sable in Morocco. We met back there in 2016. And then he crewed for me in Badwater this year when we were able to pull off a victory there, which was pretty amazing. And so just sharing with him that I was, you know, going through a little bit of a low, you know, was powerful, because I didn't have to experience that entirely solo. And, you know, and he's the only other person that knew. So, you know, sometimes a crew member, they can give you a couple positive words that can help you to reorient your mind to the right direction.
Yeah. So give us a little hint of what some of those powerful words were. And again, and, you know, I heard some rumors about, you know, something about commuting to work. All you need to do is commute to work.
Judd reminded me that, hey man, run out to nighttime course, just like run into work. So I was able to like do that. So I was able to reprogram my mind, and I was like, yeah, that makes a total sense to me. Like, you know, I just run to work. That's something I do automatic, and it's very easy for me. Just run to work. You just go boom, boom, boom. Go to work. Come on back. So that works very well.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I think we all know that sort of run from one tree to another, or whatever we can do to micro goal ourselves through. You have a lot of these laps to do. Of course, we should have asked when we started, did you have a sense of how many laps you think would have won this year before you started? Were you?
Well, I really didn't know. I mean, I imagined it would be, I really imagined we would definitely break through that 300 mile threshold, which we have been pushing on for quite some years now. And, you know, so I thought that would occur.
Yeah. And so then, I mean, of course, you're certainly with this year. It's interesting, you know, because Badwater, pretty big effort. You came into Biggs feeling good and strong with that win. So you're, you know, day two is now pretty much done. Now you're going into day three. You know, it's interesting. You know, I think Dave physically could have kept going, but he had this moment that night where he just sort of almost, you know, like, I always tell people to experience, you're driving at night, you're going too far and you just want to fall asleep. And you just like, sometimes you can pull yourself out of it. And sometimes you got to just pull your car over because you can't win it. And you never know which one's going to happen. And this thing just won, but he made it through that hour. Then the physical thing was still good. It was just the system saying shut down for a little while.
Yes.
So you get into now day three. And, you know, we did talk to Chris, and Chris, who ends up being your partner for a long time, you know, he's starting to struggle. His knee is like blowing up on him. And he keeps going. How is this sort of evolving with the two of you at this, like, you know, as well, it was the three and then the two. But as it started to shrink, how were you feeling about your prospects and, you know, like, hey, I'm here. This is, I'm better than everyone, or, you know, I got to really put an effort in. What was it feeling like?
Well, I mean, there's no guarantees in the backyard. That's for sure. So you have to protect every moment, and you have to like be very aware of everything. But I was, you know, my plan from the beginning was to be the final person. So yeah, I believed that I was going to do that. And I really didn't know who was going to be the final person people with me, but I was going to be the final person. So it really didn't matter who that was, because I was going to keep running until I Yeah, until everyone else stopped. So, but I was pretty enthusiastic to have the Japanese runner. I thought that, you know, he's a very strong willed personality. And so I, from what I observed of him, like the 12 hours leading up to us being the final three. And then Chris was a definite surprise in a sense of like, just how incredibly he worked through just things that would have made 98% of 99% of people stop that are strong runners. So, I mean, the third night, I pretty much thought that we had him knocked out like at least twice on loops where he was just barely making it back. But when he go back out, I mean, I just thought, okay, it's going to be Maury and I, you know, Chris is not going to make this. He's just hanging on by threads. And like, it would really impress me because he'd be skipping like sideways, like through that loop because he couldn't run like normal ways. So he'd actually be running sideways, like skipping. Like, I mean, I was just like, man, that is just amazing, Chris. I was so impressed by that. I was like, I've never seen anyone do that before. Like they're just so tenacious. That they're not going to give up, even if they have to like skip sideways through the damn night. That was pretty cool. And we got to the daytime and I told Laz, I said, I don't think these two guys are going to quit. I mean, I think that, you know, all three of us have pretty much decided we're not going to submit. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I don't think anyone's quitting here. It's not going to be good. But that was impressive of Chris and also the Japanese run. They both ran like some really strong races and it was really incredible to be a part of that.
So was there any one time when you were looking at Chris, when you were looking at Maury and you thought, you know, I just don't know if I could beat these guys, and you started feeling defeat? Or were you able to at all times feel, you know what, you know, I probably look equally as bad as they do, but I'm not going to quit. I'm going to show up at the start line every hour and I'm going to be finishing that lap. You always have a full belief in yourself that you were going to be the last person standing. Or did you ever feel any one time that, I don't know if I could beat these two?
Well, there's always in the human spirit, there's always a little bit of like, you always wonder, like, you know, that dream you have, if it's, you know, if it is possible, or, you know, you always know that I could knock myself out by making a mistake. So I was always sensitive that I could blow it with a mistake, you know, I could blow it. So, I was cognizant that there was for sure no guarantees. Like, it's a backyard ultra. There is no guarantees in the backyard ultra. But on the other hand, I also always felt like that I would outlast both of anyone else that was there. Just this time I was like, that's where I was. I just felt like I was going to outlast them. But again, it's so delicate because it could be a mistake that you make and it could cost you the race, and that you can't control once that happens. So there's no guarantees in the backyard ultra. Right. No guarantees.
Dave always says to me, it's going good until it isn't. And and you don't have any, the difference, like even if you were going to go, I don't know, let's say you wanted to do the Tahoe 200 and you had a bad hour, bad 3 hours, you can, you know, crank it back up again. Here, there's no tolerance. I was actually surprised at how many people were like running to the start line with 20 seconds to go, you know, just making it, like, not because they were incapable. They just were underestimating how fast the clock goes in those last 3 minutes, or just sort of lackadaisical. So you're right. There is no margin for error. I mean, it's literally once that third whistle blows, you're done if you're not there. So staying, you know, sort of very aware, that's another level of, right? So you got all this nutrition issue to deal with. You got some sleep issue to deal with. You got the physical thing to deal with. And then you have this format to deal with. And they are compounding. And of course you have all the people. So it's like certainly a crazy combination of risk factors that are hard to sort of manage through. So you have a great crew. You're eating well for 3 days. You're feeling strong. Look, clearly you set out to go win this. And, you know, your competitors are putting in the effort which you would expect. And you guys, you blow through the 67. So you're now in, you know, new territory going along. You guys break through the 81, which John Stocker, you know, set just recently, right? I mean, you know, and now it's like, okay, I guess we're going to be here for a while. But then, you know, you get closer to that last loop. Was there any indication in your head that Chris was just not going to stop at some point? Were you letting that creep in, or are you just like, I'm going and
dissolve? No, like something happened that third night and we said, like, I don't want to use profanity here, but man, I was like, fuck that shit. Perfect. No, it's over with. Now this is just going to go on forever, man. And I don't care however long it's going to go. It's just going to keep on going until everyone quits. So it was like a switch, but you know, like what Chris was able to do, which was so remarkable, is that fourth day on the trail, he was just strong. Like that knee thing that he had going on, it looked like he didn't have any issue whatsoever. So he did a great job of acting, if that's what it was. You know, he ran with a good stride. He looked fantastic on the trail. And so at that point, I thought, you know, sometimes it does happen that people do kind of fix themselves in the midst of the race. And I pretty much thought the issue that he had on the second night or third night, that was, I pretty much forgot about that because he looked so strong on the daytime loop. And then also the Japanese runner and I, we were pretty much going at it with each other. So I think Chris was just holding back. And he was just, thinking, man, Harvey and the Japanese runner, they're going to destroy themselves. And this is perfect for me because I'm not doing this crazy sprinting up the hill, running through the gates and like running around the woods, yelling and hollering and stuff like that. So I think he at least put himself, he was in a good position because we did expend a lot more energy there. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of looked at Chris as being weakened from like the third night, and he wasn't as much on my radar. I knew he was there and I was impressed by that. But the Japanese runner and I, we were really kind of, you know, going at it. We respect each other, but we were going at it with each other more that day. And we used a lot more energy doing that than we necessarily needed to. You know, it's like you get to a point where you're sometimes you're racing with somebody, the person that's with you at the end, and sometimes you're racing against that person, and sometimes you want to go like to the next furthest possible distance, and sometimes you're trying to knock each other out. So there's some different things happening. And it's not always the same at every backyard ultra. It's different chemistry that occurs between the final runners. You know, like the other backyard ultras I've done, I've always had a little more chemistry with the runners at the end. And that's not saying anything negative about Chris or the Japanese runner, but they were just more introverted, and they weren't like really interacting as much on the course as I have in the past with other runners. Like Guillaume and I, we were just chit-chatting a bunch and like joking with each other. You know, it's like I had an adopted brother. Courtney, you know, Courtney is like the sweetest person on the planet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, running with her is like running with like the motivation machine. Mm-hmm. You know, so she's not like only motivating herself, but she's giving positive motivation to the person she's, you know, running with. And so, you know, that was phenomenal. But Chris and the Japanese runner, I'd be at the start line with them. I'd be like, all right, guys, let's get it. And they both kind of like be just like in their own phase, which is fine. But it's funny because we didn't have a, and then all of a sudden the Japanese runner out, we'd all of a sudden like get into like a sprint up the hill. Like, who the heck is run? Mm-hmm. We weren't run up the hill the first day. We run up the hill the fourth day. So
not showing any weakness, right?
It was pretty funny.
Oh yeah, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about that. When Maury dropped out, I believe it was on the 81st hour. Now you and Chris exited the corral. He only showed up, what, was it 15 seconds later or 30 seconds later?
I'm not really sure. I know it was very close. I mean, it had to be like less than a minute. It was probably more than 15 seconds, but maybe less than a minute. So maybe 30 or so seconds.
Yeah. Now, so, everybody who was watching the live feed, and there were a lot of people watching at that time, they said that was the most emotional moment of the entire race because He kind of collapsed into a crouch and he was very, very emotionally, you know, hurt, disappointed. Who knows, a warrior like him, you and him were battling back and forth. That would have been an incredibly terrible feeling to know that you couldn't continue when you were that close. If you were listening right now, do you have any messages kind of for him? Do you want to race that guy again, or is this a guy that you don't want to see at a race again because this guy is tough as nails?
Well, he is tough as nails, honestly. I only have deep respect for him. Mm-hmm. I hope that he knows that, and I plan to reach out to him still. But I hope he knows that. And that, you know, I think that what he did was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it could have happened to any three of us, even though we were all like really dedicated to finish and continue running. So I just don't think you can be disappointed with yourself when you give 100% effort like that. It's like that's the last thing on the planet. You can't be disappointed. If you give 100% effort, you can only give your best effort. And if your best effort doesn't carry you that day, that's okay. You know, I was the assist in Biggs, you know, twice before this. And so I know that feeling. He did have like a very, very strong, almost like you said, almost like a warrior like mentality that he did not want to submit like on his life. So you know it's he seemed to like I saw some of the pictures. It seemed like after he went through that moment of like feeling the emotions of like sadness of not making it, then it seemed like a few minutes later he did light up and he, you know, had a good embrace with Laz. And I think that there was a switch there. So I think he made it, you know, through that moment. And I know like from the people that like, it's pretty neat, like at the community, like the little city we create, because I know like the other runners were helping him and Chris. And like, they said that he was very gracious and thankful for the help that he received when he was running. And his wife was there, and I know she was fantastic. Like I was enjoyed seeing her positive encouragement. And the other Japanese runner, I think he was maybe knocked out like six, like he was like the sixth runner to go out at the end. Mm-hmm. And he was another really just soft-spoken, very pleasant, honorable person to run with. So, you know, I know that, yeah, Maury and I, we kind of took it to a next level on that fourth day with like the sprints and the hollering and all the other jazz. But I think that's just a kind of the color of the backyard ultra, you know. It's like, there's just kind of I was looking at it as like, you know, the enthusiasm of running together. So, I mean, I looked at it like we were just, you know, kind of breaking through barriers. And it was exciting to be on the fourth day and feel like that euphoric high to just want to like tear off. So I mean, it wasn't the smartest thing always at times. there were times where, see, unfortunately we had the language barrier, and there were times where I saw Maury just, you know, he just was like barreling down the hill. in the trail, like through the Rocky area. And I'm like thinking to myself, that's probably not the best place to do that. Like on day four, we did it on the pavement. We did it through the Rocky area, but here is probably a good spot to like, just kind of slow down a little bit, you know, get a little bit of a moat. So I do kind of like the collaboration in the Backyard Ultra. Like I really like what I have with Guillaume and also Courtney. And I like that energy that creates. I don't know if I really like this real high pressure, you know, super, super intense, contentious battle at the end. Mm-hmm. I mean, we played it, but I don't know. I think you got both worlds. I've had different experiences with the Backyard Ultra. It's kind of interesting. I'm curious other people, you know, how that plays out for them. David, have you had like in Canada, you had a Backyard Ultra where you were the finalist?
No, I haven't. No, the best I've done was third at Biggs 2 years ago. So
okay.
It's neat the feelings that you end up having with the other runners and the amount of time that you spend. It's funny that you bring up Chris. You know, Chris is quite an inside type character, because I found that the most batty person on the course was Chris. And Chris and I ran a lot of day two together because, for whatever reason, he started bringing up his family and his kids and his wife and his career and you know, we started talking.
Yeah, I didn't hear any of that. So I mean, I think it's interesting. Like, see, people absolutely might change day to day. Oh, so what you get in day one is different than day two versus day three and day four. You absolutely know, it's like totally different, like personalities.
Yeah, no doubt. And we had these all. You know, I found that you end up creating these different relationships with different individuals at different times for different reasons. And you end up running in the same pod with a couple people, and you know, you feel like you're always running behind them and you trust their foot placement. And then somebody else is talking about whatever. I found Maury, he and I were running often together, and he was always eager to pass me on the trail, especially on the climbs. And I found he was flexing a little bit. Bit early, and that's his personality, and that goes along with what you were saying about the warrior personality and what you guys were doing on day four, which makes all the sense in the world. So that's what's neat about these backyard races. It's full of times of you know, contemplation out there and being conservative and then being aggressive, at times flexing, at other times just not. So let's talk a little bit, Harvey, about your broken hand. When did that happen and what did that look like?
Yeah, so in thinking back, it was like, I believe the, somewhere around like the 80th loop. And what had happened was, I think those daytime, you know, shenanigans with Maury and I, like sprinting all around the place and making all the extra hollering and stuff and already in the fourth day. Yeah, I got, I was down on energy, and I also was, it wasn't like super hot, but once you've been running for 4 days, as you know, like your body has a harder time adjusting to the differentials in the temperature, whether it be a little heat and sun in the daytime or the chill and the cold at nighttime. So I got a little dehydrated on the fourth day, and my energy was like, it is like all energy was to forward throttle, and like there was nothing else for anything. So I had gotten to a point where those last like few loops on the trail, I was making it by like 4.5 minutes or something like that, which seems like very minimal. Like once when you've been, you know, getting through it in a couple more minutes faster than that previous days. And so, I like was just going up the hill. I think it's about 3/4 of the way through that loop, and there's like a rocky section, and I literally just fell down forward, and like when I landed, I totally hit my hand, and then my body went all that energy right into that one point. And it's like I had zero energy to like roll or like do like a little bit of a, you know, push up down, you know, just anything to kind of like differentiate that energy. So it all went on the hand. And I knew like right away that, you know, I had done something to my hand, but I didn't know what it was. I knew it wasn't just likely bruised. I kind of hit my knee a little bit, but it wasn't much. The knee was like 3-4%. So it was very minimal. And so I just checked my knee and I was like, my spirit animal for this race was a honey badger. So honey badger falls down, breaks the hand. It doesn't matter. Honey badger gets up, keeps on running. That's how it is. Yeah. So that's all I thought. Like the hand's not really that important, like for running, you know, you don't really need it. You just have one hand. You can get your drink with one hand. It's not a big deal. You can still like, you know, use your hand for like motion. So it just kept on going. And I got to the crew tent. I didn't even say anything to my crew, or I don't even think I said anything to anyone. I just kept on moving.
Yeah. Wow. The honey badger doesn't give a crap, you know?
Yeah, whatever. No. Like it's you're there until you're not running anymore. So that wouldn't be your reason, right? Because you're right, didn't affect your running. But certainly that stress, maybe if you're up in the 90s, it might have added up later on, but you know.
No,
you,
it wouldn't have.
No. There you go. All right.
No, it's just a hand. You don't need a hand. You don't run it. It's like I'm not gonna stop the race over a hand.
You can cut your hand off then.
Seriously, take care of it. Since that happened, I've not had one single painkiller. Like not Tylenol, not Advil, nothing. Like zero. Like I mean, I went home the next day. I got home at like 11 o'clock at night. I went out, ran my mile, and then my student teacher, his fiance is a ER doctor, and she suggests I go to ER. So I went at like about 12 midnight. And then I like did the x-ray and fourth metacarpal, but it was a nice clean break. So it didn't need anything special. Just, I had like a little makeshift, like kind of, it's not like a cast, but like the next thing from it. Mm-hmm. And then now I've got, as of a few days ago, like this little brace. So it really, the hand's not that important.
Mm-hmm. So you're, you got 84 done. Chris is still there. When you go out on 85, you don't know that he's stopping, right?
I had no idea. No, I really didn't. I thought he just seemed so strong, man. I thought we were going to be running all night long.
Mm-hmm. So then you're running, you're in front. When did it dawn on you that this was it, the last loop? Was it till you've crossed the finish line, or was there any other part in the middle where you got this sense of something happened with Chris?
Well, the 12th hour of the fourth day, you know, we had a interesting setup because we had 11 hours on the trail and then 13 hours on the road. So the 12th hour, when we finally moved to the road, you got mostly in the daylight. And I started off with a major lead. Like I got to the midpoint, I'd seen like maybe 4 or 5 minutes, maybe 4 minutes ahead of Chris.
It's a lot. But
it was a lot. And I was like, oh, geez, man. Like, I had no idea what was going on. But when I came back, I got to like the 3 mile mark and he passed me like at that point. So he went from like being like back, it seemed like about half a mile or at least a third of a mile, to like passing me by mile 4. And so at that point, I just figure like, well, he's going pretty strong. Like, as I saw him run all day on the fourth day, and he just ran. And when he ran past me, I said, well, it looks like we're going to be out here for a long time tonight. You know, so I was like, really, man, he's going. So then the next loop, you know, I went out, and when I got out there, I didn't think anything of it because, you know, it's the same thing he did the previous loop. And when I went back, you know, then I sort of like, you know, then you start to wonder and suspect. But at that point, you've also been running for 4 days. So you wonder, maybe you made a mistake, or maybe, you know, it's like you always have to be like very conscientious of what's happening. So, yeah, I had some inclination by like the final hill climb that this might be it. But then again, it's like the backyard ultra, it never ends. So you just feel like it's never going to end. You literally, it's never going to end. So you just keep on moving. And it was nice to see everyone at the finish. you know, seeing a whole collection of people and the energy, that was real nice. So it was definitely a surreal experience to have a dream like, you know, going after Badwater, going after Ohio backyard, and then Biggs. And it was one of the most incredible life experiences as well as running experiences to have that culminate. You know, the other special thing about this backyard ultra was just that having it live, like that's really unique for ultras, you know, to have like a quality live feed. You know, I've done the Desert Solstice before where we have like a live feed, you know, on the 24-hour race. But, you know, I don't think people tune in to that at the same, you know, level of interest because, you know, you kind of tune in and you see like, okay, people are running at that pace. You tune in 2 hours later. Maybe someone's altered their pace, but a whole lot in the race doesn't change that greatly. But with the backyard ultra, like, it's like, you never know what's going to happen. There's no guarantees in the backyard ultra. Anything could happen. So as people were really drawn in, and like, even this weekend when I was running the Flying Pig Marathon weekend, I did the 5K yesterday with my 99.7 year young friend, Mike Fremont. And I can't tell you the number of people that came up to me yesterday and today and said, oh my God, we were watching the live feed. I was waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning and, you know, doing this, or I was at work and I was falling. I mean, all these people, I mean, I had probably at least 24 people, 36 people tell me that, just people that a lot of them I didn't know, that just were like following the race. And that's only Cincinnati. So, I mean, you got all across the globe, all these different runners from different like continents and countries. And that's what's, you know, so remarkable about this sport. It really, you know, draws people in. Yeah. And it's kind of neat because anyone could win. Like, you know, you don't have to be the fastest runner. You don't have to be the strongest runner. You don't have to be like many things, but you can win. By putting a strong strategy together in other dimensions.
Yeah, and so being relentless, right? Absolutely. Harvey, and you know, you can't discount as well too just how many people you've motivated by you know, trying, by working as hard as you did and by not quitting. I mean, that's, think about the marathon today that you ran and how many people, you know, were you know, succeeded and ran the race they ultimately wanted and really exceeded expectations. Because, you know, if Harvey could do it, if Harvey could run over 350 miles, I could get through these 26.2 miles. You know, you motivate people along the way. So tell me a little bit more about that finish line. So you cross the finish line after completing your 85th hour, and Sandra tells you you don't need to go back out again, and you don't need to. You can sit and you can sleep and you could eat all the vegan burgers and all the food that you want to. And
that, you know, vegan food was good.
So how did that feel? How did that feel to know that you did not need to stand up and answer that stupid bell again?
Well, I almost felt like doing it. You know, it's like I was really not really finished yet. But it was just it was so neat to like connect with all the people there. Who were on the live feed and the people that were like there from the beginning, you know, Laz and Sandra, just everybody, you know, it was so neat to this, it's a wild event. So it's neat to share that experience with everyone. And, I remember like talking to Laz and one of the first things, I wasn't thinking this the whole race. I wasn't thinking this I didn't think this at all, like for weeks, months at all. But one of the first things I said is like, Laz, you know, winning the bigs, it gives me an entry into the Barkley. And he seemed like he was going to backtrack a little bit on that, but he was agreeable. The next day did tell me, I will be the sacrificial lamb in the Barkley. So
yeah, I'm not so sure. I would disagree, but but he's the godfather.
He is the godfather. Yeah. So thank you, Dave. I didn't really want the moment to end. So I wasn't really ready to go anywhere. I just enjoyed Yeah, congratulate Chris. Just an incredible race. You know, he ran such an incredible race. It took a tremendous amount of tenacity to survive with the adversity he had as well. Mm-hmm. And that was impressive. And then I was just thankful to my crew chief, Judd, who basically he's probably the best crew chief in the world. I know we all say that, but he comes up with stuff that other people look at our stuff and they start mimicking it. Like, I mean, he comes up with stuff that we see like later on at like Desert Solstice and no one's ever had it before because he's come up with it. So, I mean, he's just got a real creative mind and I love that. And then just the energy, like, I mean, having like Howie Stern, some of the other like photographers and videographers that were there capturing it. It just was kind of neat to know that it was being broadcast. You know, most races we do, you only have like a limited broadband. And the broadband at this race had increased. And that's kind of neat. Like, you don't normally get that at ultras. Mm-hmm. You know, have that like live feed where people could tune in. And that's kind of neat that you kind of set like a precedent that could grow. And that could be, imagine where that can go in 5 or 10 years. Oh, yeah. You know, it's like, it's already out of control. And imagine where it's got the power to move towards is kind of striking.
Yeah.
And, you know, and as we get close to wrapping up and letting you sort of recover a little from your run and everything today, you know, Dave and I talked a lot about this 100 loop kind of mindset, you know, like, but maybe there isn't really, you know, if we manage this, you know, the question is, what are the variables that would contribute? Of course, you need someone to run 99 with you if you're going to do 100. So two people have to be capable. What do you think, Harvey, now that you've sort of pushed it to this level, what do you think is next for Backyard? Is it that it's people are shooting for 100? Is it, you know, another element of it, you know, or there's, of course, no finish to this thing ever, it just keeps going?
Yeah, it's the way Laz was created. It is there is no finish, right? Mm-hmm. So, the backyards, it, on a course like you have, like where the record was set in the UK, I think that, you know, they could, you know, very easily maybe hit, not easily, but they could definitely hit, you know, 100 this summer, next summer, or something like that, because more people want to go, you know, it attracts more competition, mm-hmm. previous people that have experience that can go further. And there's not, you don't have quite as much like topography and like technical elements of the course for like bigs as well. Like, I mean, there's no limits. You know, it's just that every time a new record is set, it just makes it easier to get to that point because people start to change their mindset about what's possible. Mm-hmm. So it's like everything is about what your mindset believes is possible. So it certainly is possible. Like some runner, she asked me if it's possible. Like when we were running bigs the first day, she says, "Is it possible that someone can do 500 miles here?" And I said, "Yes." And she's like, "No way, really?" Yes. So yes, it's possible. It absolutely is possible. It is, but there's other elements to it, like the weather, like you said. I mean, Laz is just, he's something quite special person. So, I mean, as long as Laz is there, you know, Laz has that power to conjure up some magic. You know,
yeah, sure
without
does.
Laz there, it's not going to happen. So, I mean, not in that particular spot, but yeah. So Laz brings some special energy and you know, some metaphysical crap to the being of the beast.
Yeah, there's no question. I'm really happy that the world record belongs at this point to Big's Backyard, the original, you know, backyard course in Laz's backyard. You know, he created some secret sauce. And I think that, you know, we all go there and try our best. And Harvey, this year you were the best. And you know, I want to run with you again in a couple of years. But I can't imagine right now, you know, the feeling that you have and coming off of this and really even thinking about of what's next. You know, what you're chasing tomorrow. You alluded a little bit to that earlier about Barkley. I mean, you earned a spot. There are very few spots at Barkley. It's something you don't turn down. I can't imagine you're turning it down, and you're gonna.
No, not.
You alluded it before. You got to go get a compass.
Right.
But you know what's next for you? How do you how do you come down off of this cloud?
And yeah,
dream just as big as you've dreamt before.
Right. So I think it's always important. Like we, you know, a lot of times we feel like some sort of like. Once you've had a big high like that. So it is real important to find some new element that's going to work a new set of skills, which actually works out very well for me because Barkley is a whole nother animal. And where my skills are weakest at the moment are like navigating in like, you know, places where there's no trails, you know, that's so I'm excited about the opportunity to like learn those skills to develop my navigation and hopefully I'll make it past loop one. We'll see. You know, either I might not make it past loop one, I might make it past all five loops, you know. Never know. Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to throwing my energy into Barkley and giving it my best shot in terms of the puzzle, you know, so that's exciting. And thank you for all the like very gracious, like words you guys had tonight. That was very kind of you. Mm-hmm. And it's really, I just feel like a representative of the sport because I'm just one amongst so many others that are really phenomenal athletes that pushed at the bigs. I mean, yourself, you had like Courtney, Maggie. I mean, they're just phenomenal runners. This positive energy, seeing what they did, like, you know, they weren't, there was a lap in like day two where they went back to help another runner. They moved back and they actually ran with someone else. So they wanted to keep that runner moving and not from dropping out. And like, that's so like giving, you know, and I think that's something more powerful in the energy that we draw from with the bigs is like that love and giving element. I think that could actually carry us to further distances than the, let's destroy each other element.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they both can get us far, but one I think actually will ultimately get us to even further distances.
Well, Harvey, you know, you're a role model on so many levels, and your gracious in winning is something everyone should listen into, because what you did was far beyond what any human can sort of really contemplate. They don't fully understand that, you know, you're just saying, oh yeah, well, you know, I did 85. It was a remarkable mental, physical, emotional, and just overall personal achievement on your part. And so congrats. We're going to keep watching you. And if you keep putting up this stuff like this, we're going to just have to keep talking to you on the podcast, Harvey. So
thanks, brother. Oh, it's a pleasure, man. So I love connecting with you both.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thank awesome. You.
Definitely.
Congrats.
Thanks so much, you guys.
Dave, I think Harvey is not only one of the best ultra runners in the world, I mean, he's also one of the most gracious people we've had the pleasure to speak with. And can you imagine winning two backyards and Badwater all in 1 year? I mean, that's like more like a career of accomplishments. I mean, it'll be fun to see what he can do in 2022. I'm excited to see how he tops this year. Okay, that's a wrap for this week. As always, a big shout out to our sponsor, Performance Tea. You should check out their new Endurance Electrolyte Blend. It's amazing. Half and half, and it just keeps you going. You can find them on performancetea.com, and they've given us a discount code for any of our listeners to get 20% off their purchase. Just use Chasing20 at checkout. And we greatly appreciate it if you could follow us on Instagram and give us a review on Apple Podcasts. That would be awesome. As always, a huge thanks to our listeners for coming with us on this journey and chasing tomorrow with us. Thanks.